Hello and welcome to our new Charity Digital podcast, How Did You Get There? I'm Sasha and I'll be hosting this episode today, and I'm delighted to say I'm being joined by and talking to Kirsty Marins. Kirsty is a digital communications consultant with over 10 years' experience in the charity sector. She helps charities to understand the importance of good communications and supports the sector by connecting charities with their audiences. In 2016, Kirsty won a Charity Comms Inspiring Communicator Award, and in 2017, won Best Trustee on Social Media in the Social CEOs Awards. If that wasn't impressive enough, Kirsty provides training, works with charities on their social media strategy, and is also a copywriter. In fact, Kirsty has written for The Guardian, HuffPost UK, Third Sector, and even for us at Charity Digital. So, Kirsty, your resume is pretty impressive, to say the least, which is why we wanted to invite you onto this podcast episode today and discover how you have gotten to this point you're at now. Before we get into the meat of it, though, we like to do some quick fire icebreaker rounds. So, are you ready?
Oh, no, I'm a bit scared now.
I know, I made that sound a bit scary. But first off, are you a cat or dog person?
Dog, definitely dog.
Yeah. Any reasoning behind that?
No, not really. I think, well, maybe because dogs are quite affectionate, whereas cats are quite offish.
Yeah, they're a lot more kind of individual, aren't they? They can get on with their lives, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like a dog has to have you in their life, whereas a cat could totally live without you.
Very true, very true. Okay, Teams or Zoom?
Ooh. It depends what I need it for. So if I'm doing training online, it has to be Zoom because of it's just better functionality, like breakout groups wise.
Yeah.
But I think I do prefer Teams.
Yeah.
If it's just sort of a normal kind of chat.
Yeah, definitely. Agreed. And you wake up in the morning, do you go for a coffee or do you go for a tea?
Oh, coffee, 100%.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yes, need the caffeine. Oh. Although tea has caffeine, I should. I haven't had. I don't know why, but since I was about 13, I stopped drinking caffeinated tea. So yeah. The only tea I will drink is rooibos, which is South African, like naturally doesn't have any caffeine or herbal. So hence, never a tea in the morning because I have to have a caffeine hit. So it's got to be coffee.
Mm.
Coffee and Wordle, that's my new routine.
See, I'm not a person who can drink coffee and feel okay afterwards. I don't know, I just get really jittery and it just doesn't set me up well for the day.
I'm sorry for you.
I'm hoping the more I do it, the less I'll find problems with it. But there we go. Anyway, thank you for that. Very interesting, as always. But anyway, I think the best place, obviously, to start is to kind of know, When did you decide you wanted to get into this field? Was it something that you might have done at university if you went to university? You know, when did this kind of career begin for you, I suppose?
Right, let's rewind. So I did go to university in South Africa. I think our universities are a bit different over there than they are in the UK, as in we start with 5 subjects and then you do 5 subjects in your second year and then you specialize in 2 for your third year. Okay. So in my first year, I did like English, English, sociology, psychology, communications and criminology, I think it was. Wow. Or was it something else? At that point, it might have been something else. And I was doing really well. In my mock exams, I did brilliantly. And then when I got to the exam in my first year of English, I failed the poetry module. And that meant I failed. And then I had to rewrite it, which I did. And I failed it again, which meant I failed the year for English.
Oh, no.
And then I thought, screw this. I'm not doing it again. So actually, I think that's when I did criminology. Yeah. So I kind of had a bit of an odd, instead of doing my degree in 3 years, it took me 4 because I was behind 1 year in a subject.
Yeah.
And then when I left university, I for the first year, I worked in a bookshop. I had lots of different jobs. I actually taught drama as an extracurricular activity. I worked at a bar manager at the rugby games, you know, typical kind of student-y things.
Yeah.
And then I decided, my dad is Scottish, so I have a British passport. So it was really easy for me to come over to the UK. I came with no plan at all, just to sort of like, let's go see what happens. I lived with a old school friend for the first few months. She happened to work for a company that was like a financial data vendor. So long story short, I got a job with them when I first started. So actually, when I moved to the UK, I worked in the finance sector, which I quite enjoyed it actually, even though I'm not really a kind of data numbery type person, but it was more like an account management type role. I worked there for almost 2 years, I think. Then I moved to Standard & Poor's, which is a massive company that does, they have like, is it indices? Something like that. I met my husband there, so that was really good. So really good thing that I kind of did happen to land into finance. But then I just decided it wasn't really for me. It wasn't really what I wanted to do. I really wanted to work in the charity sector. I had done lots of volunteer work when I was in South Africa. So when I was at school, I used to volunteer at like a hospital. And I think I had tried to get into the sector here, but it was really difficult not having any charity. I don't know why. Even entry-level roles still expected you to have charity experience, which was really strange because I'm like, where would you get it from? So I did a lot of volunteering here as well. I volunteered for the Amnesty International. No, sorry, not Amnesty International. Anti-slavery ball. I was on the committee, so I helped organize one of their balls at Grosvenor House. I also did some volunteer work for Radio Lollipop. And it probably took me definitely over a year to actually land a job in the charity sector. Wow. So I got my first job at Dementia UK. It wasn't called Dementia UK at the time. It was actually called For Dementia. So part of my job was to do the rebrand. But I actually started in fundraising and events.
Okay.
Lasted a year and couldn't face another golf day or carol concert. I was like, this is not for me. So I got quite lucky in that we had John Suchet as our patron. His wife at the time had dementia. He'd written a book. So we were getting quite a lot of publicity, which meant that we needed to rebrand and we needed to do comms. And there was nobody at the charity who did comms. So essentially I asked to step into that role, which my CEO at the time, Barbara, very kindly let me do. And the rest is history, as they say. So since probably 2008, I've worked in comms in the charity sector ever since.
Wow, amazing. I mean, that sounds like a really interesting kind of turn of events, lots of things kind of just happening all of a sudden, and it all sort of worked out, which was really lovely to hear.
Yes, nothing was strategically planned.
Yeah, like nothing ever really is, or if you do try and plan things, it never goes your way, does it? But I guess what I'm quite interested about is, what was that? I mean, it sounds like you did a lot of volunteering anyway, but what kind of was that main drive for you to say, you know what, the charity sector is really where I want to be compared to perhaps any other sort of sector?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'm not sure, to be honest. I think I've always been somebody who's been who just cares a lot, like about other people, who cares about the world, who wants to make the world a better place. And you know, whilst I did enjoy kind of working in the finance sector and I made some really great friends who I'm still friends with, it didn't really have a purpose or a meaning. You know, essentially you're just making money for people who already have quite a lot of money. And I just felt like there wasn't really, anything meaningful. So I think I think I just thought, well, where's the most meaningful place or sector I could work in? And obviously it's the charity sector. So it seemed the obvious place really to try and move into.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and was that kind of the main drive for you when you were kind of, when you had that year sort of trying to get into the sector, but sort of struggling with that? Was that kind of what was always in the back of your mind? Like, you know what, keep pushing on to try and get into that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, I knew I didn't really want to do what I was doing in the finance sector. Mm. And I don't think I could have, or maybe I didn't even think about it, like move into a different role in the finance sector, if that makes sense. I just didn't really want to work there anymore. And I must say, though, actually, at the time, I lived in like a house share, and one of my housemates worked in events. And she worked at that time, I think she was working for a travel company. And I just thought her job sounded so glamorous. And not that I wanted to work in that sector, but I did want to work in events. So, which is why I started out in fundraising and events. But then very soon learned I didn't like it at all.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I mean, speaking of things that you don't like, and this might be a bit of a controversial question, considering most people listening are working in charities, but I think, is there anything that you found particularly challenging working in the charity sector that you might not have necessarily experienced elsewhere?
Oh, goodness. Yeah, absolutely. Where do I start? Let me think.
The long list.
It was a bit of a culture shock, if that's the right expression, going from like a really big global financial company to a very small charity, with my manager essentially being the CEO, sort of not really having, you know, like training necessarily, just sort of. And because we were so small at that time, even though my job was technically fundraising and events, actually a lot of my role was data input. Mm. I was a person who people sent in their donations, and I would have to put it on Razor's Edge and send them the thank you letter. And, you know, so it was sort of a bit, it was more sort of admin related, really, rather than, you know, actually fundraising and events. And then when I did get to do the fundraising and events, it was always kind of committee led, you know, and it was sort of, they were really lovely, but, you know, ladies who lunch and, you know, I was really young. You don't, you just sort of do what you're told. You don't really get the opportunity to, you know, input or kind of make suggestions or, so I think I found that quite difficult, you know, just sort of, kind of not really being able to make my own mark, just sort of, you know, doing what I was told. And you know, at that time the job was quite boring, to be very honest. And I was really not good at Razor's Edge either.
No, that makes sense. I mean, what I guess I'm quite interested is about, obviously, you know, this was the beginning of your career in the charity sector, but then what ended up leading you to go towards more kind of freelancing?
Okay, so I've actually, this is the second time I've been freelance. So the first time I went freelance, and I have to caveat this with, you know, I met my husband in the finance sector. He still works in finance. So I have to say I am in a bit of a privileged position in that, you know, we are quite comfortable. So it was easier for me to go freelance than perhaps some other people. I had just worked in, I just got to this point where I hadn't enjoyed the last, so when I left Dementia UK, which I did love, but I'd been there 3.5 years, there wasn't really any room for progression. I felt like I needed sort of the next step. And then the next two charities I went to, I just didn't really enjoy. I didn't enjoy the job. So I sort of thought, instead of just going on to another charity, why don't I take a bit of time to sort of go freelance, see how that is. Also maybe take more time to look for another role, because sometimes when you're unhappy, you can make a bad choice by just going to another charity because you think it's going to be better. And that doesn't always work out, which is what happened to me. So I went freelance. And I won't lie, the first time I went freelance, work was very slow. Yes. So it wasn't going that well. And then I got asked by Guardian Voluntary to attend an event that Just Giving was running to then write up about it. So I went along. And I was chatting to Sally at Just Giving, who I'd known over the years from going to like NFB tweet-ups and all of those fun events we did back in the day. She asked me, how is it going with freelancing? And I was very honest and said, actually, it's not really going that well. And then I think about a week later, she contacted me saying, we actually have a position at Just Giving for a content and community manager on the charity side. She was like, well, do you want to come in and have a coffee and just like have a chat? And I was like, yeah. Nice. I told my husband and he went, it's not a coffee, it's an interview. And I went, no, don't be silly, it's a coffee. And he went, no, trust me, just go there looking for an interview. So I went, and of course it was an interview.
Oh my
so God. I'm really glad I took his advice and actually dressed more appropriately for an interview than I probably would have turned up in like jeans and a t-shirt. So yeah, to cut a long story short, I got offered the role and I loved it. I absolutely loved working at Just Giving. I found like I'd finally found where I belonged. And then it all went wrong because they needed to get investors and to sell, which we now know they sold to Blackboard. And unfortunately with that, quite a lot of people got made redundant, including myself. Mm-hmm. So I went back to freelancing. I thought, well, let me just do that until and actually it's been 9 years and it's been amazing. Like I guess maybe it helped having Just Giving on my CV.
Yeah.
But I've had pretty much constant work for 9 years. I've worked with some incredible charities, really big ones to really small ones, to delivering loads of training, to working with funders, to suppliers to the sector, just quite a broad range, but always sort of within the sector, which is what I really wanted to do.
What a story of how you got there, essentially. Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, I've always wondered, you know, it sounds like freelancing, if it works, sounds great, because in a way you kind of, how I imagine it is you sort of work on your own terms in a way. But I am quite interested in what is the reality of it. You know, what would you say your favorite parts are about freelancing, and what do you find quite difficult about it, would you say?
Oh, so I think my favorite part is obviously the flexibility in terms of, and that is across a range of things, in terms of, as I said, because back in the day, I went to lots of like networking events, you know, I built up quite a lot of followers on Twitter. For 8 years, I was the admin of the Third Sector Facebook, Third Sector PR and Comms Network Facebook group, bit of a mouthful.
Yeah.
You know, I've been a member of Charity Comms for about 11 years. I'm now a trustee. I am someone who quite likes to network. And I think that's really important if you're going to be freelance, because essentially you have to be somebody that someone thinks of when they've got like a role, or even someone recommends you. Like I've had lots of people recommend me that I've never even worked with them, if that makes sense. But because they know what I do, they'll recommend me if something comes up. So I think the best part is flexibility, in terms of I can be selective. You know, I don't have to say yes to everything. You know, if there's something I don't think I want to do, or a charity I don't particularly want to work with, because maybe, you know, the cause is not that exciting to me, or that sounds terrible, but you know what I mean. You know, I can be selective and turn the work down, which is a really privileged position to be in. But you know, I want to work with causes that I care about and I'm passionate about. And I don't think when you work in-house, you always get that luxury, because you know, you need a job and it's what's available at the time. You know, not everybody gets to work in the cause area that they're actually really passionate about. So I think being freelance offers you a bit more of that sort of, you know, selectiveness. And then obviously flexibility in terms of, you know, as long as I'm obviously not bombarded with work, I can take the odd day off or the afternoon off, or I could go meet someone for a coffee at 11. I don't have a manager that I have to be like, oh, I'm just going for a coffee. Yeah. Or is it okay if I just, you know, take an hour off to have a chat with someone? You know, I don't have to think about other colleagues when I go on holiday. Like, are they on holiday? Like, oh, that means I can't go on this date. I've got to move it to like 2 weeks later. So I think, yeah, all of those sort of things are the positives. The negatives, I mean, I have been very, very lucky in terms of, you know, I've had very few issues in terms of, you know, people maybe not paying on time, or like that's probably the only issue I've had, which has not been a big one, is maybe late payments. I think, and I hope if anybody's listening to this, you know, please do remember freelancers do have bills. And if they send you an invoice, please pay it on time, because, yeah, you know, they've got to pay their rent, their bills, you know, and that's the problem sometimes, is like chasing invoices. I mean, I think once the longest I had to wait was 3 months, which was, you know, it's not great. No. So I think that's probably the negative. And I mean, it's not really been an issue for me, but I do have, you know, I know lots of other freelancers, and, you know, sometimes it can be, you know, it's what do we call it, peaks and troughs, like, or feast and famine. You know, there'll be like August, for example, is usually very quiet for freelancers because most of the sector sort of goes on holiday. Yeah. So, you know, finding work potentially could be, you know, for some freelancers is quite difficult, can be really challenging. As I said, I've been very lucky that I've, you know, had lots of word of mouth referrals, which is gold dust to freelancers. I mean, essentially, that's what you want, is that kind of word of mouth referral. If you can get that, then, you know, you should be successful, really.
Yeah, it does sound like, from what you're saying, networking is such an important part of the work that you do, just to be able to build that base of people who will know about you or, yeah, recommend you to other people. You kind of mentioned earlier about now that you're also kind of a trustee, and I also mentioned in the introduction that you kind of got an award for that as well. So I'm quite interested to hear a little bit more about your work as a trustee, and, you know, how do you get to have these awards as well? I know it feels quite unusual, probably kind of, we don't do it very much in our culture these days to sort of big ourselves up and say why we might have deserved an award or something. But I think what I'm quite interested in is, yeah, how did that happen, I suppose? And how did you feel getting those awards?
I mean, to be honest, both charity comms and social CEOs, you had to be nominated. So I know, obviously now I wasn't a trustee at the time, but now as a trustee of charity comms, I think, maybe I'm getting confused. I feel like I was a judge. No, I was. Yes, I was a judge, actually, on the Inspiring Communicator Awards a couple of years ago. So what essentially happens is somebody nominates you, and then, you know, the judges go through all of the nominations and decide who they think deserves an award. I think the reason I got it, because, I mean, to be quite honest, it is quite unusual. I know Zoe Amar has had one as well, and Matt Collins, you know, they're also, well, they own kind of agencies now, because typically it is people who tend to work in a charity, or they might be a volunteer even, that's, you know, does amazing sort of inspiring communications work. So I think the reason I got it was probably mainly because of being the admin of that Facebook group, because, you know, it's got thousands of people. And at that time, I was actually the only admin. I didn't have anyone else helping out. So I think that was probably the reason I got it, for that. Then again, the social CEO. So at that time, I was a trustee of Small Charities Coalition, and it was their marketing person, Felicity, who had nominated me. And that was, I had absolutely no, it was a total surprise.
Oh, really?
And I remember when I was told I'd been nominated and invited along to the awards, they were like, you can bring someone. And I was like, should I ask my husband? And then I was like, oh no, I'm never going to win it. Like, there's no point. He has to leave work early and it'll just be like disappointing. Because when you're the inspiring communicator, you know in advance that you've won. So when you go along to the event, you know you're getting an award. So I brought my husband to that one because I knew I was getting the award.
Yeah.
But the social CEOs, I literally did not think in a million years I was actually going to win it. And then I did.
Oh, my goodness.
Had to go on stage and I was literally just speechless. I just stood there going, thank you. It was a bit of a shock, but it was lovely.
So you didn't even prepare a speech?
No.
Oh, no. Oh, my goodness. That's crazy. Yeah. I mean, that is very interesting. It sounds like an interesting experience, to be honest. But I think, yeah, I mean, what kind of drew you towards the trustee role in the first place?
I think, well, definitely with Small Charities Coalition, it was because so when I worked in-house, every charity I worked at was quite small. Mm. So I never really had the opportunity to manage anyone. Apart from like some volunteers, I also didn't really have a seat at the table. You know, there was no such thing as like SLT because basically it was just, you know, the CEO and then, you know, the rest of us type thing. So I think for me, the reason I wanted to be a trustee was to get that kind of leadership experience and that experience of governance and just being able to, yeah, feel like you really are making some, you know, decisions that affect, you know, the charity that you have that seat at the table. So that was why I applied to be trustee of Small Charities Coalition. And I was a trustee, I did two terms. So I was there 5 years. And then when I finished that role, I did say to Charity Comms, because started at Dementia UK, as you know, I came from the finance sector.
Yeah.
Apart from, you know, university, I did do communications, but I hadn't really applied any of it for years. Mm. I also didn't know anything about the charity sector really in the UK. So yeah. I do remember just literally starting at Dementia UK and Googling like charity communications or something, and up pop Charity Comms. And I was like, oh my goodness, there's actually like a membership that's gonna have, they have events. And so I managed to get approval to join as an individual member. And I've just been a member ever since, even in my freelance. I have a, I think it is still just called an individual membership. It's just that you're a freelancer rather than a, you know, work in house. So when the Small Charities Coalition one came to an end, I think I approached a dealer and just said, you know, I'd love to be a trustee of Charity Comms. Like, could you let me know when, you know, when a position comes up or whatever the process is? And I think I had a year in between being a trustee for Small Charities Coalition, and then I think a dealer got in touch and said, well, we are recruiting now for, I think they were recruiting for 3 trustees. Mm. So you had to be a member to apply to be a trustee. And then one was a co-opted. So I had to write like an application form, and it basically goes on their website and then members vote. So I was really nervous because, you know, I don't work in a charity, so I can't say to colleagues like, oh, please vote for me, please vote for me. But luckily I had enough votes to get voted in. Wow. So, yeah.
Amazing. That's great. No, I do like that. It sounds like a lot of people sort of rallied behind you. They've got your back in the work that you do. So that is really sort of wonderful. I'm thinking just a little bit more about sort of back to the work that you're doing as a freelancer. Is there anything that you've done in, you know, the past sort of 10 years, I suppose, that has been like an amazing project for you that you've worked on?
Ooh, really good question. I feel like there's been a lot. I mean, to be honest, my freelance work is quite, what's the word? I can't think of the word. I write for a living and I can't think of the word. It's quite diverse.
Yeah.
So, you know, as you know, I do copywriting, so I write for yourself, I write for third sector. Now, so writing is like one part of what I do. Training is like a big part of what I do as well. And then I do like strategy work, social media strategy, or I work in-house. So actually at the moment, I'm doing a contract at GOSH. So I'm the interim social media manager whilst they... social media manager is on maternity leave. So from time to time I go in-house, which I quite like because it just puts me back in that world, which I think when you're a freelancer is quite important because you can forget how things actually are in a charity. You know, you want to, you come up with all these like, we do this and do that and do this, and then you forget about lack of resource, lack of budget, or internal politics, or, you know, that sort of thing, or trying to get buy-in. So yeah, from time to time I do in-house roles. I will say I did one a few years ago at British Red Cross, which I just absolutely loved. I loved my time there, probably because it's also like a humanitarian charity, which is one of my big kind of cause areas. But I think probably, I mean, so I'm probably diverting slightly. Training wise, I'm one of those people where I kind of have a love-hate relationship with training. So I kind of, before I have to do the training, I'm like, oh, I have to do training, like, oh no, because you kind of have to be in the mood, because, you know, you've got to be, you know, you've got to be energized, and it takes a lot out of you as well. So I always be like, oh, I've got to do training. Oh, but then at the end of the day, I'm like, I get such a buzz from it. Like, oh, that was really good. Or, you know, you have someone who goes, oh my gosh, you know, that was amazing. I learned X, Y, Z. I'm going to implement this. So that I get a really good buzz from. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I've worked on so many things. I couldn't really pinpoint. One, and then I don't really want to, maybe the others will be like, oh, how come we didn't get a name check?
That's true. Fair enough. So I guess sort of looking towards the future, is this something you're happy, you want to stick with this, what you've got going on at the moment? Or have you got anything that you're thinking, actually, I might veer off course a little bit and try something slightly different?
Well... the thing with freelancing, so at the kind of towards the end of last year, I had decided I was going to not do training anymore. I was going to, I didn't really want to do social media strategy anymore. I wanted to really focus on copywriting. And then I had a call from GOSH to say, we have this interim social media manager role, would you be interested? And it was like, yes. So that all went out the window. I think it really depends. It's sort of, you know, if you have kind of like the right client and the right role, then it's quite hard sometimes to say no, even if in your head you're like, well, I really want to do more of this. But then something else comes up that seems like you can't really say no. So I will say I am planning on doing more of the copywriting again. So once my contract ends, I really do want to do more copywriting. I would like to do more copywriting for charities because most of the copywriting I do is not for charities. So it's either news articles or it's for like suppliers to the sector. So that's kind of my goal this year, is maybe to increase my clients that are charities that need copywriting work. So that's what I would like to do. Ask me again in 5 months how that's going.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it does sound like you had an amazing career from a sort of outsider's perspective. And I think, you know, I suppose my last question for you really is kind of for someone who might be starting off, they've perhaps just gotten out of university or just gotten out of school, and they want to start a career, whether it be in the charity sector or perhaps freelancing or perhaps sort of in comms, have you got any sort of words of wisdom that you'd want to impart to that younger person sort of starting off in their career?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, my biggest advice would be to network, you know, to get on Twitter, to find the people in the sector who you should be following, you know, reading up on news from, you know, third sector, civil society, charity digital, charity comms, you know, kind of really immerse yourself in the sector and seek out conversations and just get involved. I mean, I think that's the great thing about the charity sector is that we are very, like, approachable. You know, most of us are really nice people, not everyone, but, you know, most people are really nice. They're also really willing to help, you know, and I think if, you know, a young person was looking to get into the sector and, you know, they approach somebody on Twitter and ask for advice, you know, 98%, they're going to get a good response and someone would be willing to help them. So I think it's just about trying to make those connections, kind of like putting yourself out there a little bit, you know, joining in conversations, not being afraid to kind of be part of the conversation. I think that would really, really help. And it doesn't matter what area you're trying to get into. I mean, this works for like fundraising, comms, events, whatever it is. I do think, yeah, and there's so many Facebook groups, you know, there's fundraising chat, there's the Sector PR and Comms Network, there's some, I think, some other little niche ones like community managers, and, you know, you'll find your tribe. Yeah. So I think just, you know, seek out those networks and then like immerse yourself in them and get involved.
Yeah, definitely. Well,
I mean, that's what I did.
Yeah, and it really worked. Yeah. No, that's great. Thank you so much for that. And, you know, hopefully whoever is listening who might be, you know, in that position might feel inspired and ready to start chatting to people, really. But thank you so much, Kirsty. It's been a really interesting conversation. Really nice to sort of see how your journey panned out, essentially. And for anyone who is interested and enjoyed this episode, feel free to subscribe and rate our podcast. And that does wonders for us. So thanks again so much, Kirsty.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, it was great.
Thanks. Bye.